International web radio show about watches and the people who love them. I'm your host, Jerome Pinot, speaking to you live from Switzerland as usual today. Welcome to the show, everybody. The call-in number here, this is a live show. You can call in and talk to our guests today, as usual. Area code 760-683-2652. 760-683-2652. The only live horology show where you guys, the listeners and gals, get to call in and talk to watch industry movers and shakers one-on-one. And today we are going to be talking to one mover and shaker. We were supposed to have two, but unfortunately Elizabeth Dorr, who was scheduled to join us today, just called me recently. She's got a horrible migraine going on, so we told her to take it easy, relax, and take care of herself first, and we'll do the show another time. So we're here with Ben Clymer, actually. The one and only who has founded a blog called Hodinkee. And he's a superstar of the horology world. He's not on the factory side. He's obviously not in the marketing department or in the design shops. But he's part of a very important and growing part and segment of the industry, which is online journalism and journalism as a whole, really, because that's really what it's all about. He's also a journalism student. He's based in New York City, and he's there with us today from New York City. And he's one of the most successful watch bloggers known to man and watch over the past several years. His blog, Hodinkee.com, has a huge notoriety, great readership, and he's respected not only by his peers but also by the industry and read pretty much worldwide. So I'm going to shut up for a bit and let Ben take over. How you doing, Ben? Thanks for calling in.
No, thank you, Jerome. I appreciate that introduction there. Very kind. Cool. You know, it's a sunny day here in New York, and life is good.
Life is good. So what brand of pajamas are you wearing? Ben was talking on Twitter before, saying he's on his couch in his pajamas waiting to come on the radio show. So I figured I'd ask you because I'm sure people want to know.
Well, at the time it was Ralph Lauren pajamas, but now I have taken a shower and changed into some civilian clothes.
Nice.
So now I'm ready to go, and I'm good to go.
Nice. That's respect, man. So listen, Ben, tell our listeners a little bit. How did you get started? How did you, why watches? Why horology? How did you manage to build this powerhouse that Hodinkee has become? Tell us how you got there.
Sure. So, you know, I was always into watches. Growing up, I had the G-Shocks, of course, and the Swatches and things like that. I had a Casio that could control TV and VCR, and I used to mess around with when we'd watch videos in school and things like that. And then when I was about 16, my grandfather, who wasn't really a collector but, you know, liked nicer watches, Rolex, things like that, gave me an Omega Speedmaster, you know, just kind of on a whim. An automatic Speedmaster was about, you know, 15 years ago at this time or so. And I just wore that watch every day for 10 or so years. And I went the traditional route that many do. You know, after school, I went into consulting, and then I worked for a bank for a little while. And I was at UBS, you know, another Swiss company. Can't get out of Switzerland no matter what I do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was there in 2008 when the group just didn't have any work at all. It was like, you know, the financial kind of slowdown. And the group was, you know, didn't have anything going on. So I would just sit there. And the company actually blocked a lot of news sites, sports sites, things that, you know, the average person would be surfing on during the day. So
sure.
I started looking at my Omega, and I said, you know what, why is this watch so expensive? Why is it so heavy? You know, how does it work, et cetera, et cetera. And then I went on to a few forums. I think it was actually Watch You Seek first, and then Time Zone, and then, you know, a few others. And I just started researching my own watch. And then I started a Tumblr account, and Tumblr back then wasn't too well known. And, you know, it was called Hodinkee even back then. And it was really just my kind of daily diatribe on watches and what I learned. So, you know, after I learned everything there was to learn about my Omega, I went into Rolex and Patek and, you know, the big brands that people know. And then it got, you know, kind of bigger and bigger. And then I started to kind of reach out to some people in the press. And then Josh Spear, who runs kind of a trend spotting site, picked up the site and said, you know, this is kind of cool. And then we got, you know, a few hundred hits from there. And then somebody at GQ.com, or back then it was men.style.com, actually found it, or, you know, liked what he saw, and, you know, did a little interview with us, or with me at the time. And, you know, we got a few thousand hits from there, and just kind of, you know, grew organically. And then after about doing it for a year full time at UBS, I left and started doing Houdinski full time. So it was my actual job, which is what it is now. And, you know, ever since I went full time on Houdinski, I mean, it's really kind of taken off, and traffic has, you know, increased, you know, several times.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's become kind of a viable business. And we've got, you know, a few guys writing for us on a freelance basis, you know, ranging from somebody who's a 23, 24-year-old graduate from Georgetown, who's, you know, an analyst in D.C., who just loves watches, to John Reardon, who's, you know, he used to work for FedTech. He's written several books on the subject, and he's just been named the head of watches for Sotheby's in New York. And so we've got kind of a wide range of people that are passionate about watches, and then we kind of have me moderating the entire thing.
So I guess we can thank UBS for giving us Houdinski, at least sourcing it.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Something to thank him for, imagine that. So,
exactly.
So right off the bat, how many years ago was this? Did you mention that?
I started it in 2008, and then I went full-time in 2009.
Gotcha. So right from the get-go, you had a pretty good readership. I mean, clearly you hit a nerve there, people. I mean, was there anything like that before? Were you kind of a pioneer in there?
I mean, I don't think I'd call myself a pioneer, but, yeah, I mean, there are a few other blogs out there. I mean, Robert Yon, who does Fratello, I think is really one of the grandfathers of watch blogging, and I think to this day he's still, you know, one of the most important, and will continue to be one of the most important. And he was one of the first guys that I read, and, you know, he's one of my friends now, and he does great stuff. So I wouldn't call myself a pioneer, but, you know, I think that, you know, I was one of the few that kind of went full steam ahead, and realized that this could be, you know, a viable business and could be, you know, something that people come to every day. You know,
so
a lot of the forums and things like that, and other blogs, you know, you get a post every 2 weeks, every week, you know, it's kind of a weekend warrior type of thing. Whereas we publish now, I mean, several times a day.
How many guys you got working with you? Or gals?
We've got five freelance writers that contribute, you know, once a week on average or more. And, you know, they're all on Twitter. They're all, you know, well-known in the online sphere. You know, Jason Heaton, for example, has written for Gear Patrol and Ask Men. We've got some other guys like John, for example, who's written books. So we've got a really good range of writers on the team right now.
Did they come to you, or did you pull them out from wherever they, you know, what they were doing and say, hey, you guys want to cooperate with me? Or?
Sure. So actually, as you mentioned in the intro, I'm actually in graduate school part-time for journalism. And once I got into the graduate school, I realized that I couldn't do this on my own anymore. And this was about a year ago at this point. And I said, I want the site to grow. I can't do it on my own. So I put out a call for applications, just a post on the site. And we got over 200 people applying. And I said,
200
give me some sample posts. Yeah, over 200, yeah. Yep.
Wow.
And then, so, you know, I kind of will. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying that's amazing.
A lot of people want to get into that. I mean, people are passionate about watches, and it's like, it's kind of a dream job, and this is literally my dream job. I couldn't be happier. You know, so it's, people are interested in it, and, like, if they can make, you know, if they can get paid to talk and play with watches all day, I think it's a great thing. So I just kind of whittled it down to, back then it was four writers, including one good friend of mine who I've kind of grown up with. And then John Reardon, who I met, you know, just kind of through a mutual friend, and I realized that he's a great writer. I mean, he's written books, and he knows more about pet tech and several other brands than anybody could ever ask for. So then he kind of joined the team as a special contributor, and that's where we are right now.
So these people, do they have to know watches? I mean, obviously they have to know product and technicalities inside out, or do you get people who may not know specifically about watches, but, you know, have an interest, or maybe talk about other aspects of horology?
Well, I mean, they're, you know, all of our writers are different. You know, everyone has strengths. Like Jason, for example, is a huge dive watch guy. You know, he loves dive watches. He knows the history very well. He knows what makes a good dive watch. You know, I kind of focus more on the vintage pieces, as well as the kind of the ultra high end modern, you know, the MB&Fs, the Oerwerks, et cetera. And then, you know, Jeff, for example, loves Jaeger and AP, modern and vintage. You know, Felix has a focus on some kind of less expensive, more esoteric models that, you know, that I wouldn't necessarily come across. So we all kind of have our focus, and it worked out to be a pretty evenly matched, you know, an evenly dispersed kind of editorial, because, you know, I think a lot of blogs get in this habit of where, you know, it's one person I don't think one person's, you know, opinion is really all that meaningful. It's so subjective. You know, I mean, we try to do things at a fairly objective rate, you know, real journalism, saying that these are the facts, you know, we're presenting it to you. We're not trying to sway your opinion one way or the other. We're just saying these are the facts, and, you know, you make your own decision.
Right. You make the call. So tell me, how did you pick the name Hodinkee?
Sure. So Hodinkee with a Y instead of the double E on the end actually means wristwatch in Czech. So
okay.
we wanted to be watch related, obviously, but we didn't want to be, you know, Wristwatch World or, you know, watchhaven.com, just because at the time in particular, and even still today, I mean, all these sites, there are a billion sites that say watchworld.com, and 90% of them are selling fake or gray market Rolexes. And so we just wanted to be completely removed from all that kind of, you know, nastiness that's on the internet about watches. So,
right.
I mean, you know, it confuses some people, and it, you know, it wasn't great for SEO at the time. But, you know, it's worked out, and, you know, we are different. You know, we love watches, but we try to explain things in a way that's not very pretentious. You know, I mean, we talk about million-dollar watches all the time, but we say, look, I mean, yes, it's $1 million. That's insane. We get that. But at the same time, this is why it's cool. And, you know, we just say, very matter-of-fact, say, look, here it is. That's it. You know, this is why you should like it. If not, then so be it. So Hodinkee is derived from a Czech word for watch.
Okay, fair enough. They really love watches over there. I know that from having been in Prague, and I was kind of floored by the amount of stores, and people just love watches over there as well. So
they really do. Actually, it's funny. We're putting up a post maybe tomorrow, maybe early next week. It's actually the 600th anniversary of that clock in the town square in Prague, and they're doing a big kind of watch and clock show in Prague right now, as a matter of fact.
That's really cool. So one of the things, I remember when I first discovered your blog early on a year ago when I was hunting around for influencers in the industry and trying to figure out who was who. And one of the cool things about Hodinkee, I thought, was like, well, you're not really a geek, you know, product technical thing. You do fun stuff as well. Like, I remember you guys were doing skiing. You were flying around with watches. I think you even drove over a watch with a Bentley or some, like, 3-4 ton
car.
Editorially speaking, you guys had a different angle. You did that on purpose to be different, I would think, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it wasn't premeditated. It's just something that interests us. You know, I mean, I certainly love watches. I mean, much more than the average man. I can certainly say that. But, you know, I'm not a watch nerd, and I don't think we write for watch nerds. I mean, sure, we're a trade magazine in the sense that we only cover watches, but I tend to view it as kind of the watch magazine for people that would never read a watch magazine. You know, we're kind of somewhere in between lifestyle and trade. And, you know, I think that's why we've been successful in working with kind of lifestyle publications. So, I mean, we like to take things a little less seriously than others. And, you know, there's just so much nerdery on the forums, and which is not a bad thing. I mean, I think it's great. But I think to appeal to a wider range of people, you kind of have to, you know, talk about, you know, cultural provenance. Like, you know, the Steve McQueen wore this, the Jean-Claude Killy wore that. Or, you know, this watch is totally indestructible. Let's test it. You know, like the one you mentioned, their Reactor, which is only like a $300 watch. We drove over it with a Bentley. We dropped it off a bridge. We hit it with a hammer. And, I mean, that video has been everywhere. I mean, it's several thousand views.
I actually used it.
Yeah, I actually used it in my application to graduate school, believe it or not. And it worked. So.
That's funny. You threw it against the wall as well. And I remember seeing that in the beginning and thinking, oh, shit, these guys are pretty cool. I gotta keep an eye on
these guys.
So it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek approach, or not a tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, it's kind of off the cuff. And in terms of that, you know, watch brands fairly, if not very conservative, how did they take to Hodinkee when it first came out? Did they come to you, and did they try to, you know, to talk to you guys about doing some kind of either branding or you know, doing articles? Or how do you talk to me about your relationship with the brands? How did that take off? Where's it at now?
Well, I mean, it you know, it started slowly as it should and as it would. You know, I mean, the whole online media in watches is still kind of, it's tenuous. You know, I mean, the relationship between watches and the online world is very tenuous, always has been, and getting less so these days. But, you know, it started slowly. Some of the first brands that we were heard from was Stephen Holtzman's brand, Motre du Temps, and then Linda Werdelin, who's still, you know, both of them are still on board right now. And, you know, they kind of took a chance, and they said, you know what, we like what you're doing. You know, we think you write pretty well, and we think there's a future. Let's try some advertisements and et cetera. And, you know, it kind of worked out. And, you know, I mean, it's one of those things that, yes, we don't take ourselves too seriously, but at the same time, we're not spreading disinformation, which is what you see, or misinformation, is what you see on a lot of the forums, is that we do fact check everything, whether with a brand or an independent expert from like an auction house or something like that. So everything that we publish is, you know, is valid. It's not an opinion. It's fact. It's journalism. And then at the same time, also, once you meet me and, you know, you meet some of the guys that work with me, like, you realize that we're not just some, you know, some people that are doing this for fun. We take this seriously. And I think, you know, that kind of, you know, translates well once you meet other brands. And, you know, I mean, at this point, we're working with great brands in terms of advertising and in terms of editorial stuff. I think – go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, you know, at this point, I think, you know, most major brands know who we are and know that, you know, we take this seriously and that, it is mine, I guess, but, you know, it's all of ours, and I work with all of our writers to kind of create something that is, you know, universally appealing. Honestly, if I had my way, I'd be writing about vintage watches all the time. You know, I mean, right. I think I could write about a vintage watch every day for the rest of my life.
That's your expertise thing, right, is vintage?
I suppose. It's becoming that. You know, when I first got into it, I became friendly with some guys at some auction houses at Antiquorum in particular. And then I just sort of, you know, there's so much history there. And, like, you know, it's all about the discovery. You know, so you can go through an old Christie's catalog and find stuff that you didn't even know existed. And I think that's just kind of fun, and that's part of, you know, why watches are so exciting to me. But I mean, I love so much the minor stuff as well. But, you know, it's about creating kind of an even-tempered editorial tone that is appealing to everybody, not just guys that are into vintage or not just guys that are into, you know, low-end stuff. But, you know, we try to keep it relatively curated because there's a lot of crap out there. There's a lot of watches that just aren't worth your time. You and I could go to Hong Kong tomorrow with an Head of Movement and create our own watch, and, like, that's not going to be lasting. You know, we're looking
right,
for watches
let's
that...
Let's do it.
Yeah, we should.
Oh, I can't...
Ben and Jerome watch.
Puzzle next week. Shit. All right.
Yeah.
Never
So, you know, we focus on stuff that, you know, I said lasting. I think that's a good way to describe the watches that we cover. It's watches that are going to be meaningful to you and your kids and, you know, maybe even their kids down the line that are going to be in good working condition, that, you know, the brand has something meaningful to say. It's not about, you know, these companies that are just trying to turn a quick buck. You know, so we do kind of trend towards the more expensive watches just because, you know, I mean, that's where, you know, where I see lasting value.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So, from a journalistic standpoint, do you see yourself as more of a brand or a consumer advocate? How do you walk that fine line?
I mean, I view it as more of a consumer advocate, but at the same time, you know, there are so many brands that have these great stories that are incredibly interesting. They just don't really know how to tell them. And so a lot of times we tell stories about brands that, you know, they don't even know about themselves. And, you know, I've had several conversations with PR folk and, you know, marketing managers at, you know, prestigious brands and said, you know, I read an article on your site and I didn't even know that we did X, Y, and Z.
Really?
So I kind of look at it, I look at us as kind of an online historian for a lot of these brands. You know, I think we know a lot about a lot of watches that people may not know about because, you know, when you get hired at you know, brand X, they don't make you go through and, you know, I don't expect they would, but they don't make you sit down and read the history of every model. You know, I mean, it's only somebody like us, you know, at Hodinkee that would spend the time to do that or take the time to go and talk to someone that knows about all the historical stuff.
You know, you're right about that. I think it's incumbent on people to kind of do their own research when they get into these positions. You're right. So in that respect, the stuff you publish is quite invaluable to those folks. I agree.
I think so. I mean, you know, I think if every salesman at every, you know, mom and pop or even larger chain watch store read Hodinkee, I think the sales process would go better for them. You know, because for example. Well, hopefully. But, you know, like if a Breitling salesman knew that, you know, Breitling was responsible for patenting, like, the first, you know, two-button chronograph, for example. And I'm sure the most people that are selling Breitling at your average mall jewelry store have no idea about that. I mean, there's these great histories of these brands that you know, the modern, you know, representatives just aren't aware of. And I think, you know, Hodinkee is hopefully, you know, changing that.
How big is your personal collection? How many brands or pieces do you have in there?
I probably wear five or six. It's not huge. There are some others that I have that I don't wear all that often, but it's not that big. I mean, you know, it's not as big as people would think, but there's probably five or six that I rotate through.
What brands do you care to say or?
Sure. I mean, I've got two vintage Rolexes. I've got an AP, which is probably my favorite watch, a vintage AP. I've got a Bremont, I've got the Omega that my grandfather gave me, I've got a vintage Cuervo Sobrinos, and I've got, you know, a few others here and there.
Interesting. So what advice do you have for people who want to emulate you and build a successful successful platform like this? What's the best, let's say, what's the best three pieces of advice you could give a young kid that comes up to you and says, "Hey man, I want to build a blog. I want to monetize it." And that's where, you know, that's the really important part, because it's easy to do blogs. It's a lot harder to actually monetize them. You seem to be masterful at that. What's your advice for these guys?
I don't know about masterful, but I'm getting
You're making a living. You're making a living off of it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can pay my rent.
Okay.
Which is a good thing.
Well, I'd say that's pretty masterful and pretty unique. What's the secret sauce?
I mean, it all comes down to content first. I mean, content is king, no matter how you look at it. I mean, you just have to produce interesting stuff, otherwise people just don't care. But there's also the side of marketing, and we don't market ourselves at all. I mean, we don't pay for marketing ever. It's all organic, which I think is better. I mean, if you look at our traffic, like where it comes from, it's all people coming right to Hodinkee. It means we're basically like a magazine. People are coming to us not because of SEO, not because of anything else, but because they actually want to come to Hodinkee. So it's about marketing. I mean, placements in major magazines and online, you know, resources are obviously invaluable, but, you know, you need to be doing something different. And, you know, trying to emulate us or Robert Young or any of the other bloggers out there isn't going to do it. You know, you need to do something different. And, you know, it has to be something unique, and it has to have a new spin or a new angle. And it has to be, you know, I mean, nothing is easy. I mean, Hodinkee, I was doing it literally every single day, you know, over my lunch break and before and after work at UBS before I could even think about going full time.
Did you ever think, like, screw this, it's too hard, I'm going to quit? Or did you have, really rough patches?
No, I mean, I never did, because I never thought Hodinkee would ever make a cent. I mean, I didn't start it to make money. You know, it was just like something I was passionate about, something I was interested in. And, you know, all of a sudden, like, you know, a few dollars came in. I said, wow, you know, this could be something. But that was never the goal. So I never had that freak out moment where I said, you know, oh my God, we're never going to make money, anything like that. If it didn't work, I'd still be working at UBS or at a consulting company or something like that.
Right. Do you think the brands are starting to get the importance of blogging, or are they just going through the motions? Do you think they really get it now?
You know, I don't view it as blogging. I just view it as the online median. You know, I mean, I think people get throw around this term blog as kind of a four-letter word in the Swiss watch industry, and it just happens to be that we're writing online. And I think, you know, moving forward, like, you're going to see some really great journalism that happens to be written online and not in print. And that doesn't make it any better or worse than if it was published in the New York Times. It's just online. I do think brands are understanding, you know, the importance. And, you know, just from personal experience, we've been contacted by, you know, several, you know, large brands about doing stuff, and just in terms of, you know, PR, things like that. They just want to be on our, you know, send press releases to us. Cool. So, yeah, I think major brands are definitely stepping up their attention to online, you know, writing, sure.
So I think there is hope for folks who want to create something like yours, except different, of course, and first unique and different, I think. So that's a good omen. We got 5 minutes left, Ben. I want to talk to you, obviously, a little bit about Basel. When are you flying over here?
I leave Tuesday night, landing Wednesday morning, landing at like 7 a.m. Wednesday. And Blake, who's done some great stuff for us, is actually going to be with me.
Awesome. Tell me a little bit, what are you looking forward to seeing or discovering over there? What's your recommendation for people who are listening to us? What do you have to see? What can you afford not to see this year, do you think?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think something that everyone is kind of interested in right now is TAG is doing this big, you know, press announcement for a concept piece on Wednesday night, and they're actually live webcasting it, and we're going to be broadcasting it on Hodinkee as well live. And it's something high frequency. You know, they just released that micrograph a few months ago around Geneva. And it's something in that vein, certainly, but I think that's going to be a big announcement. I mean, who knows what it'll be or when it'll actually go into production. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting for sure. You know, obviously, Petech and Rolex, I mean, those are the two brands that everyone kind of, you know, they're the kings of the industry. You know, there's some ideas out there of what's coming from both, and I think, you know, it's going to be exciting no matter what. You know, a lot of the independents should have some interesting stuff. Although, you know, a few of them introduced some new stuff in Geneva, like our work with their 110, which is a pretty cool watch. You know, I think it's one of those things, like, you just don't know what's going to be the star of the show until you get there. Like, for example, you know, I was there last year, and I had no idea that Tudor was going to come out with this awesome retro, you know, the Heritage Chronograph, which was like the coolest watch anybody had ever seen, you know, at the time, and nobody knew it was coming, you know. So I think, you know, I could give you a better response next Wednesday. But, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of interesting stuff that we just don't expect. And, I mean, that's the fun of it. I mean, if you know what's coming, then, you know, what's the point? You know, I want on Wednesday or Thursday when stuff to be released to be shocked and awed. And I think I will be, hopefully, anyway.
Awesome. You're going to be there for the whole week?
Yeah, I'll be there Wednesday through Monday.
Okay, awesome. That's pretty good. Well, good, man. Hopefully we'll get your feedback afterwards and, you know, see what's going on there. But you're right. It's all about surprises, and it's like opening up a big Christmas gift. So we'll see what's going on there. Lots of stuff going on in the industry. Hey, listen, there's a couple of questions I like to ask all our guests before I let them go. And if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you the same questions, and if you can answer them without much thought in a few milliseconds, that'd be kind of cool. Ben, what would you be doing if you were not in the journalism watch business?
I'd probably be in another form of journalism, maybe car journalism, or I was definitely writing, definitely media. I love the media field.
Gotcha. Who's the most important person in your life, Ben?
Probably my parents, my family.
Gotcha. And what's your favorite time of the day?
Probably like 7:30, just when 7:30 p.m. just when things are kind of calming down for the day.
Ah, you have that in common with Jean-Claude Biver. Did you know that?
I did not.
That's pretty funny. There you go. Congratulations. Hey, listen,
funny.
Ben, thanks so much for taking the time out there from New York City to talk to us. I look forward to seeing you in person next week, obviously. And thanks for coming on the show. And best of luck to you. Have a great trip, and see you soon.
Great. Thanks so much, Jerome. I appreciate it.
Hey, take care, buddy.
Take care. Bye.
All right, folks, that was kind of cool. Ben is one of the nicest guys in the industry, and he's helped me out a lot online and offline, and I'm happy to present him to anybody who may not have known of him or his excellent website, Hodinkee. That's HODINKEE.com. Hope I spelled that right. Yeah, listen, this is it for us, folks. Thanks for listening. My name is Jerome Pinault. Website is JeromePinault.com. Social media strategist at your service here in the luxury industry. Website for the show is WhatTimeRadio.com. Next week, we are not going to be broadcasting live next week because we'll be at Basel. We'll be doing CinchCast radio interviews, but those are not going to be as live as this. And then we're picking up again the next show on April 7th with Linde Verdelin. Sorry about that. I'm not sure how to pronounce the last name, but I'll figure it out before then. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us here. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you guys soon. Be good. Time. Ooh.